And welcome to Widnes Rugby Chat episode 19 of 2024 with myself, James Gordon, and Mike Parsons. It's the end of the road for Widnes, the end of the season, playoff defeat to York at the weekend. In this episode, we'll hear from Alan Coleman, his aftermatch, his post-match reaction to the game at York and a few reflections on the 2024 season. Me and Michael dissect the York game as usual, and then after the interview with Alan, we'll talk about what's to come in the next few months, what hopes we have for 2025, and as usual, answer your questions. So to get started then, Widnes going down 27-10 to York, who, for my money, probably the best team in the Championship outside of Wakefield at the moment, and of course Wakefield is who they will play this weekend in the playoffs. It was 10-10 at half time. York just ran away with it really in the second half. Mike, what were your thoughts and reflections on the game?
Yeah, I mean, it was probably just a step too far, wasn't it, James? I think ultimately we probably all knew it deep down. Obviously, when you're building up to a game like that and you've not been in the playoffs, you know, for quite some time, you get carried away a bit and you think, oh, what if, and if we could do that. And ultimately, yeah, I think it was just a step too far. And let's have it right. You know, it's one thing going up to Barrow, isn't it? Battered and bruised, you know, trying to get a result, trying to get over the line. But like you've just said there, other than Wakefield, you know, there's not a better team in the Championship for me than York. I think, you know, you look at the forward pack, it's aggressive, it's dynamic. You've got two phenomenal hookers, and then you've got a third who's 18th man who's not getting picked. The halfbacks aren't too bad either, and neither are the outside backs. You know, you've got AJ Towers who can't get in as well. And I think for my money, if York wasn't bumping into Wakefield next, I think they'd have beat the other two teams and got to the final. I think it was a hell of an effort. But yeah, just one too far, really, I think.
Yeah, Widnes went into the game out of form, really. You know, the win against Barrow was a needed win, but they'd lost the three previous to that, albeit they weren't, you know, against York and Toulouse at home, they weren't embarrassed by any stretch. It was a close game in both of those. They were certainly second best at Doncaster. But like I say, I think in the second half, it just looked like a tired team. It looked like a team that just didn't have any energy left in it. You know, I thought the first line I'm trying the second half, I would have liked to have seen whether he was in touch, to be honest. You can't really tell on the video highlights because it was filmed from the other side. Obviously, I was sat on the side that he scored. And I thought it was a close call. He probably did score, but it was probably a disappointing try to concede. And then I just thought when Liam Harris put the drop goal over, even though they sort of telegraphed it, there wasn't a match. I think Max Roberts tried to chase it down, but you just felt that at 17-10 that it just looked like Widnes thought that was too far to get back. And then they'd not really had any ball, really, in the York half. I think there was that one kick from Tom Gilmore to the corner. And then when that ball went down in midfield and they return it for a try, that was the killer, really. And I think even without that, Widnes probably wouldn't have got back into the game. But I think, as you say, I think we talked about Hengano, didn't we? Widnes did a fairly decent job on Hengano. Yeah. Problem was that obviously Liam Harris was back in the team, and he, you know, you try and shut Hengano down, and then you've got Harris.
How good was Josh Daly as well, by the way?
Yeah, and you know they've got Cook as well, the other hooker, both Australian. And I think you look at the team, you know, you look at those sorts of players that not just York, but a few of the other teams have recruited. You do ask yourself, can Widnes get into the position where they open up that source of recruiting? I know we're going to talk about 2025 later on, but I know that fans will be asking that question, and I think it's a fair question, but I also think it's difficult for Widnes in their current predicament to to become attractive or to even become players in that market. I think the main clubs that are using, ultimately, Queensland Cup-type players, isn't it? I think the main clubs that are utilising that have probably got a secondary job or secondary sort of purpose for those types of players. Bradford clearly want to be a full-time club. They've got the academy, so the players can train full-time. York are clearly on that upward trajectory. They aspire to be a full-time club. I think clubs like Whitehaven, I think, can offer something lifestyle-related there. You know, it's by the coast or whatever. Clearly, they've got working partnerships with people. And I suppose the question is, have Widnes got enough to attract a player to come over to basically train two nights a week? I don't think they have at the moment. And we saw that with Will Evans. I'm not 100% sure what went on with Will Evans, but ultimately he went from being in Whitehaven with a couple of Aussie lads around him, probably in the centre of the community there, to come into Widnes, basically being holed out in his apartment on his own, not knowing anyone all day, every day, training twice, two or three times a week. And it impacted on him, on his mental health or whatever. And I think that is the challenge that Widnes face. Whether they can get to the point where the community or the foundation is doing a bit more, and you can, you know, Barrow have done it in recent years. Barrow did it with the Papua New Guinean lads the other year, where they had a couple of the Papua New Guinean lads over and they basically worked for the community foundation. You know, T. Ritson is another example. I know he was obviously living in Cumbria anyway, grew up there, but he was full-time at Barrow Raiders even before he went to St. Helens, because he worked in the community in the day and then played for the team, you know, trained for the team in the evening. But going back to the York game, I think it just highlights that the player pool over here is so limited now that being able to bring in players from elsewhere would almost open up new opportunities and open up new doors.
It certainly won't, mate. And I've got to be honest, on this occasion, I've got to be a little bit critical of why we haven't done it before, because you've gone through a long list there of clubs that have found a way, but in different ways of making it happen and opening that player pool up. And it's a massive player pool in comparison to the M62 corridor. It opens yourself up to a wide range of players and some players who... you sign them and they end up being a lot better than what expected and end up kicking onto Super League in some cases. I think for me as a club, if you're trying to build forward, you've got to find ways of making that happen. You know, if Barrow can do it and Whitehaven can do it, well, you've got to be looking at, well, how can we do that? Can we work with sponsors who could maybe provide jobs potentially, but also selling yourself? You know, we are a small town in Widnes, but let's have it right. If, you know, I think a couple of podcasts ago you mentioned about, you know, players coming over and they're not necessarily on as much as what you think, because part of the package is, you know, traveling, you know, Europe and obviously England. Let's have it right. We're 10 minutes away from John Lennon Airport and you're bang in the middle of Liverpool and Manchester, which have got, you know, four huge Premier League football teams in and, you know, a lot more to offer as well. So I think obviously this year on the whole has been a massive success. And I think part of getting to that next level is you've got to open yourself up to the overseas market. Now, I'm not saying I have all the answers and the keys for it, but just sat here now, if you know, I think Batley brought somebody over this year. I think there was only us and Dewsbury who didn't have an overseas player at the start of this season. So you've got to question why, you know, why can't we make it happen?
I mean, clearly, I think it's difficult to get started. Don't get me wrong. I think once you start on the road, you know, because ultimately you need to have a house for them or you need to have somewhere for them to live. So if the club hasn't got that to provide, then that makes it difficult. But once they get in the throes of having something like that, you know, I've worked in I worked in professional basketball, and I remember having, they had like 3 6-foot-5 American lads living in a 3-bed terraced house in Eccles that the club owner owned. And it's like, it sounds ridiculous, but that, you know, they had a Land Rover that they shared between them, the three of them, to get around. And it was just like, you know, it's low end professional sport or semi professional sport, and ultimately that's sometimes what it takes. I think there are certain costs and hoops you have to jump through to get work permits and stuff. Maybe it's a case Widnes haven't got the administrative resource to be able to do that. You've also got the risk of identifying players, just as you were saying there. I remember, I think Swinton had a hooker called Hayden Hansen a few years ago that they brought over, an Australian, and they had big hopes for him, and he perhaps didn't turn out how they would have wanted. And of course, when you've got someone over in that situation, it's not as easy to get out of it, sort of thing. And I think, I know Alan Coleman sort of tongue-in-cheek mentioned he's going to Australia with the England Lions for the next few weeks and he'll have a look over there. But I think that's also something that needs to be considered, is you can't just bring a player over just because he's Australian or because you need to have genuine scout reports and information. I actually remember speaking to Dave Woods, the former, not the commentator, but the former Gateshead Castford coach. I remember speaking to him a few years ago, and he reached out to me to see whether, he's obviously living in Australia now, to see whether I knew anyone who could put me in, or could put in touch with that Widnes for him to do some scouting for Widnes to recommend players. He does it for St. Helens and things like that. So there are people out there, if you can build that trust with them, that they're going to recommend players for the right reasons. But I think, it clearly opens up. The work permit regulations have changed this year, which means it's easier to get over the Queensland Cup and New South Wales Cup players, whereas previously you might have seen, I think a few clubs have been signing, even Leeds, I think, have signed a couple this week, where probably this time last year or 2 years ago, they wouldn't have qualified for a visa. But now that competition's classified in a different way, they have been. So it does open the door. And I suppose the other fear as well, and this doesn't necessarily affect Australian players, is you're always scared that you bring somebody over and a Super League club takes a fancy to them and there's not really a great deal you can do to stop them going. We had that conversation the other night, didn't we, about in a recent episode about, what's he called? Flipping X, gone out of my head. Oh, about the academy, like the development squad lad who's been picked up by Warrington. You're never going to stop that. And it's like, yeah.
I suppose the only thing with that, with it being an overseas player, is obviously it cost a Super League club a quota spot. So they'd probably be a little bit more reluctant to do it unless it was a superstar. But I don't know, James. I just feel that all the other championship clubs are dipping the toe in, and I feel we should be, and I know just because somebody's an Australian or a Queenslander or, you know, a Tongan, Samoan, whatever they may be, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be, you know, better than what's over here in the championship. But, you know, we are fishing in a very small pond, you know, the M62 corridor, and you just feel, you know, one or two players coming from over there, you've got a chance of, like you say, you know, Josh Daly's, you know, Atarigano, obviously he was already over here, you know, Bailey Antrobus, they're just a couple at York, and, you know, Ryan King up at Whitehaven, and obviously Jake Mason, even though that's kind of been, you know, lost a little bit, but you can name all these dangerous players for other teams, and yeah. I just feel it, you know, it gives the fans a boost. And I think even to like kids, what, you know, selling season tickets to kids or, you know, in schools and stuff like that. I think just an Australian player, it just sounds that little bit more appetizing to a young fan as well, you know, rather than, you know, like, you know, John Smith from down the road.
Yeah. Let's just cut off there momentarily, and we'll listen, if you haven't heard it already, we'll listen to Alan Coleman's post-match reaction following the defeat at York, where he talks a little bit about his forthcoming trip to Australia and what his plans are for the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Coleman, season's come to an end with that defeat to York. Where did you feel it went wrong in that match in the second half?
I thought we were really good first half. I thought first 10 minutes we come under quite a bit of a barrage and we held out for that. And I thought we were really good in first half, how we defended, how we stuck to our processes and just... We're busted a bit. Let's not cover over things. We're busted a bit. And some players have probably played too many games there, but they put their hands up. And first half took a lot out of us, but we was really confident in how we could get them second half because we had the win second half as well and the sun. But fair play to them. I thought they were really good second half. They capitalised on every mistake. So when we did a knock on or a yardage penalty, they go upfield and score. So everything we give them, they took. But when we didn't give them anything, we restricted them massively. I just think the fitness of bodies and the strength they've got just saw them through at the end, to be honest.
Is there a little bit of a frustration from you as a coach that you think maybe if we'd cut out them 3 or 4 hours at times in the game that maybe you could have pushed them a bit closer?
Well, the stats at half-time was two yardage penalties, 2 tries. And when they didn't get any penalties in yardage, twice they got in our good ball. So the gifts, you know, good teams are capitalising. And they're a good team. Let's not be about the bush. And then when we do get the ball second half and we've had no ball, it goes dead on tackle 4 and not tackle 5. And they go downfield and score again. And it's just like we should be in a corner. And then, you know, being, you know, but listen, I can't knock them. They've given me everything again. And we can analyse it and go over it and go over and go over and over. And you know what? We built our season on effort. And I thought effort was there again today. But we've just said then we need to grow from it, be better from it, improve it. And this time next year, get into this situation again and don't go out to this stage.
Some positives. I thought Matt Fleming, I thought Zach Barty were up over the centres. I thought they defended very well because York obviously like to run wide lines with big men out wide. What other positives did you see in the game?
I thought we kept our quiet, to be honest. He was running everywhere. He was trying to get hold of the ball and do, you know, we put pressure on his kicks. They went in, you know, straight into touch. And then he had 5-10 minutes where he come into it a bit and it cost us a little bit on our right edge and they get 3 tries on their left edge. But, you know, you'll get that. He's a quality player. I just thought how we defended that first 50 minutes, I thought, wow, you know, this is good. This is us. This is how we need to be. Because they're probably the best middle side, how they take metres from you. But yeah, we've worked all week on and just controlling the ruck, and I thought we did that. But then I thought when we changed some bodies and people probably done 5-10 minutes too long, but we was busted a bit and they got us. And good sides will, and they've got a real good 9 in Jesse Daly. Is it Jess Daly?
Just Daly.
I thought he were really good. I thought he were one of their better players, to be honest.
And yeah, they just seemed they had moments in the game where they just put the tempo up a little bit more and you perhaps didn't have the response to that. And I guess when it got to 17-10, you could almost sort of see the tiredness in your team. Did you think that it was like, well, thinking it's a bit of a mountain to climb even when it was 2 scores?
I wouldn't say a negative, but I saw some body language when they dropped the goal at 17-10, and I looked over, and I'm big on that with my players, and I try to get a message on saying, listen, it doesn't matter, go again. Do you know, just next job basically, because one try and it's all open again. And they didn't give up, but you could just see mentally it had got us a bit, and then we're thinking we've struggled to score and then we've got to go twice, and it does. In this sport, mentality is a massive thing, and you know, I think that was a big turning point because, you know, there was no pressure on the kick neither, and it was obvious he's going to do it. So we'll learn from it.
Obviously you're disappointed about today, but how do you reflect on the season as a whole?
Really proud coach, proud of the players, proud of the staff, proud of the club, proud of everyone involved, yourself, the media guys, everybody who's been in my first journey. I've just said to the players there, thank you, because, you know, I've loved every single minute. I've had some crosswords with people and I've had some disagreements. I've upset some people. I've let some people go. We've brought some new people in and that's part and parcel. But wow, it's been the most enjoyable year of my rugby career just because I can see the potential in the club. That's the big thing for me. This club can be as big as anything in this championship. We saw today behind the sticks, James. You was here, you saw it. Wow. That, it was deafening at times. It was amazing and we thanked them at the end and we mean it. But we've got to kick on. We can't just think we've done all right for sure. We must improve on and off the field.
So what does it look like now for you, Alan Coleman, the end of the season? You have a bit of a break maybe, but then what do you get stuck into before next season?
I fly to Australia on Sunday. So that flight was going to be changed if we won, but it doesn't need. So I go with the England lads on Saturday. We watched the game together in an hotel and fly to Australia. 3 weeks there were... It's probably come at a good time. Normally I'd be on holiday with my wife.
Bet she's pleased.
Yeah, well, we're going away at Christmas. So, no, it's normally you go on holiday and you don't really have time to think. You try to plan for the pre-season, where you got it wrong, where you can get it right. But this, in Australia, it's probably come at best time. It'll give me time to reflect. You know, I'm only over there assisting the head coach. So I'll have a lot of downtime. And I'm not taking away my wife's holiday time. I'm taking away my own space, and probably be good. Pick some brains over there. Maybe pick some contacts up. Who knows? Some players might want to fly back with me. But yeah, have a bit of a chill time as well. I think we've all earned the rest time. But yeah, we just got to. I'm going to focus massively on where I feel we can be better, but also where we were good. Because where we were good, we've got to make sure we keep doing that process.
Well, so we're officially in the off-season now, and countdown to the next game will no doubt resume imminently. End of Jan, start of Feb, you would expect the first game to be in. Of course, it will probably be a Challenge Cup game because they're bringing in the Super League teams earlier next season, which is nice of them. There's no guarantee that you'll get a Super League team, but of course, if you do get them, it'll be a home game. Right, so before we get into questions, let's talk about 2025, Mike. We've touched upon recruitment a few times over the last couple of months. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Gavin Bennion, Lewis Hall and Deck Patton and Jake Mason are the four that have been rumoured.
Joey Romero as well.
And yeah, that have been rumoured. There's obviously question marks over Jake Mason because of the situation, but I think I said last week that's still on the cards. There's clearly going to be some, there's going to be something that happens regarding that one way or the other, and I suppose depending on what the outcome of whatever happens, depending on the outcome of that, will depend on whether he lines up for Widnes next season. But it sounds very much like the Deck Patton deal is done. He'll be partnering Tom Gilmore next season. And then I think we've talked about Bennion, of course. He struggled a little bit of injury in the past few years, but solid prop at championship level. And Lewis Hall, who could be a very useful utility-style player. The club announced recently the players that were departed, and to be honest, I'm not expecting, although I think we talked again recently, clearly there's players whose future hasn't been announced one way or the other. You know, those players who haven't had a new deal announced but then haven't been mentioned in the leaving the club category. My understanding of the situation is that the majority, if not all, of the players are going to be staying.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if any of the ones that, you know, we haven't heard about don't stay, to be fair. That's just from my opinion. Yeah. You know, doing the maths at the Vips night, Alan said we had about 26, 27 players. So if you add the four who we think are nailed on, you know, Gavin Bennion, Lewis Hall, Deck Patton, Joey Romeo, that take you to 22, 23 if you include Jake Mason. That, so that probably indicates there's probably, you know, three or four players maybe that we've signed for next season already who, you know, for whatever reason it hasn't broke through the media yet or nobody's caught wind of. So I'd say that's where the recruitment's up to. I know there was talk from Alan that ideally, you know, obviously it'd come down to money, but he'd want to get to, you know, as close to 30 players as possible. Obviously, you know, for squad depth, a part of that will be because I believe there's a new rule coming in, isn't the next year, where players can only play a certain amount of minutes as well. So he'll want to rotate his team if and when possible, you know, to keep them minutes down. So I'd say that in a quick summary, that's where we're kind of up to, really.
Yeah, last year the club, of course, announced, you know, the, as they have to be fair, they were drip-feeding announcements. I think I remember Matty Fozzard's deal being announced quite soon after the season. They'll probably use it as a way of promoting season ticket sales, which is fine. It's a long off season to get through. In terms of 2025, so we talked again a little bit last week. There's going to be 13 teams in the Championship. To be honest, that's a question I do need to ask of someone, because we need to figure out where the extra home game's coming from in the season tickets. That's where we need to figure that one out, because they're only going to have 12 home games in the league next season. 13 teams. Oldham, very strong, will be coming up from League One. So you would anticipate that they're going to be candidates for the top eight playoffs, which it will be next season. Top four is where you want to be. There's massive question marks over London, to be honest, whether they'll even take to the field at all. Which may actually, if they don't, I mean, it would be terrible if they don't, but it might do some favours for the format, because then they could play with 12 teams in the league. But where do Widnes stand now, do you think, for 2025? Do you feel like it's fairly as simple as they've just got to do better than this season, and that's the way they've got to look at things moving forward?
I mean, I think in a nutshell, I think that would obviously be the idea, wouldn't it? I think sat here now, I think you'd be one of the clubs, York and Bradford definitely being another two of the clubs where, you know, assuming Wakefield are going to be in Super League, which I'm sure they will be, the top of that league opens wide open for anybody. It's as simple as that. And I think it'll be really exciting towards the top. I know budget-wise, probably Bradford would be the favourites, but by no means a Lee or a Wakefield. You know, York will be licking the lips under Mark Applegarth. How he didn't get Coach of the Year, I will never know, but that's just my opinion. Us, we're ticking along very nicely, and if you can build off this year into next year, we can really have a go at it as well. So I think that, but for me, I think the way the game ended against York, and I've not been to a season or a game in a long, long time where you've been beat 27-10. You know, everybody leaves the ground accepting, you know, the better team won, but everybody being still so happy and delighted with the effort and the commitment of the players. I think for the momentum we've got and the feel-good factor around the town, and like I say, you know, Wakefield going up and getting out the way, there's a massive opportunity there to get into the 1895 Cup final for, you know, two part-time teams. I think for me, you know, without getting ahead of myself, that would be a massive carrot that's dangling that I'm sure everybody could get behind, and I'd love a day out to that final. And I think it's really achievable, James.
Yeah, I'm sure that will be certainly an area for improvement from this season. Of course, Widnes lost to Swinton, basically, which cost them progression. Like you say, with Wakefield out of the way, you're almost looking at the 1895 Cup thinking, well, there's nobody in it really that you're going to be scared of. You should be at Widnes of proving this season that they can mix it with anybody. And so, yeah, that sounds realistic, like a realistic target. I think what you're saying, I think the fans that have stuck with the team deserved Saturday in some ways. And yeah, we need to get the lapsed people back and get people in the ground, and the club needs to do work to understand why those people went away, and they need to make changes. They need to make suitable changes to get them people back. But I think it's good for the fans that have stuck by the team that they were able to experience that playoff game and go to a playoff game where you had a realistic chance of winning. It was, you know, I don't think anyone could call it necessarily one way or the other before the game. And I think as much as I've seen a few people criticise the club for calling it a memorable season, but I think when you look at the previous three or four seasons that people have been through, and that's not even including the last Super League season, which was an absolute joke, to be honest. When you consider what, if people who've been going week in, week out have had to go through, ourselves included, Mike, it has been a memorable season because you've achieved that top six, you've achieved that playoff match, and got to the end of it. I think the good thing is like I think you've said it a couple of times, is that whereas last year and maybe the year before, you're ending the season with a tinge of disappointment. I think there was a little bit of feel good in Simon Finnegan's when they beat Bradford towards the end of the season, and I think we finished the season with three or four wins. There was a little bit of a feel good then, but certainly nowhere near to where it is at the moment because of the achievement. And like I say, I think Widnes as a club, realistically, if Super League is beyond the current ownership, if you like, for want of a better term, there's no reason why it can't be a consistently top-end championship club on and off the field. And that has got to be its, like I say, probably forget about Super League for now, becoming a top-end champion, you know, almost becoming like Featherstone, where you're a dominant championship club on and off the field. You get good crowds, you generate good revenue, good sponsorship, you're developing and you're knocking on the door. I think if Widnes can get to that point, I think that would be a great point to get to.
Yeah, 100%. You know, like, without being critical to, you know, the people who've wrote them comments, you know, there's a lot more to this season than just, you know, making the playoffs. We, you know, obviously lost in the end. You know, the memorable bit is, look, there's a couple of ifs still. You know, we've got to go into next season and achieve again, you know, when, you know, the benchmark is this season. So improve on that. If you do that and you can improve year on year, it is memorable because, you know, where the club was at the start of this year, and I'll cast your mind back to when we lost at Swinton in that 1895 Cup game. I remember Alan walking off the pitch and, you know, fans was arguing with players, you know, fans was shouting at Chris Hamilton, and you was just seeing this new coach walk off the pitch, and he had a look on his face, a little bit of thinking, oh my God, like, what on earth is going on here? And you've come from that point to fast forward to this point in time. And in that time, you've got, you know, the youth development squads all back up and running, in which, you know, whether it's a positive or a negative, a lad's already been picked up in that. You know, working alongside the community, you know, the community teams getting invited down for training sessions. By the way, a big shout out to Halton Farnworth Hornets under 16s. They won the Lancashire Cup. That's a great achievement as well. But, you know, the fan base, you know, is all engaged again. The media, you guys, James, are more, you know, you've got more of a relationship with Alan. Attendances and the season tickets now, you know, the early signs are that they're selling better. You know, you've got a team on the pitch of when you lose, you're not getting absolutely pasted. Like, we finished on Sunday, we was out on our feet. Half of our pack wasn't fit. You know, you could see that. You've got Matty Fleming bombing it back and putting someone into Rose Ed. You know, years gone by, even last year, we finished up at Featherstone and it was a very, you know, similar thing. We was done at half time and that ended up 50-60, and that doesn't exist. There's a massive culture change, and, you know, we have just been knocked out of the playoffs, but there's a hell of a lot of good signs there, and there's a hell of a lot of, you know, building blocks been put into place now, and you've got a core unit of a squad where you can, you know, add to it. You're not having to, you know, rip up and start again. You know, we've been through processes where, you know, we've got to a stage where we've almost had a new coach every year, to the point where everybody's looking at each other thinking, well, what's the answer now? We've had a bit of everything. You know, you've got a coach who the fans are bouncing off and relating to. So there's a lot there that, you know, has been a massive success. And potentially in a couple of years' time, you know, you can look back on this season and it's fair to say it would be memorable because, you know, if we do, like I say, progress next year and then the year after, you know, you go even further and you are all of a sudden a regular top three, top four team, you can look back at this season being the season where a lot of stuff got sorted out and a lot of hard work got put in place, you know, to build the foundations to get to that point.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the coach there. Well, assuming touch wood, nothing happens to Alan Coleman between now and February, it'd be the first time Widnes start consecutive seasons with the same coach since Dennis Betts' last year in charge, which perhaps indicates just how frequent the coach changes have been. We should probably caveat that by saying that I think at least two of those hadn't left at this time. I think both Kieran Pirtle and Tim Sheens went in sort of October, November time. So, yeah, fingers crossed Alan Coleman's still there in February. Questions, Mike? Question time.
I suppose we've actually covered quite a few of these while...
Let me get the Alan Killshaw one out of the way. So Alan Killshaw's hearing with the RFL was meant to be Wednesday this week. It's been delayed. I think rightly, it's not because of this, but Swinton have got a game on Sunday against Hunslet, which is quite pivotal. It'll decide whether they're in the Championship next season. But of course, if you've not noticed, there's a bit of drama going on at the RFL at the moment with Robert Hicks being suspended and another member of RFL staff being suspended. Of course, Robert Hicks is the director of legal, so you would think that a lot of disciplinary related issues have perhaps been put back while they get to the bottom of that situation. So yeah, no news on that front, I'm afraid.
I did have one here, James. It's not really a question. It's more of a suggestion. And I got it sent to me, actually, and I was actually quite impressed with it when I went on the link. It was apparently York had available at the game something that I didn't see or use, a digital program. Now, I got sent the link to this, and I went on it, and I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was dead easy to use. Interviews on it, links to the club shop, links to the website, players to watch in our team, you know, coach interviews. I thought it was brilliant. So obviously, kind of the question is, can we get it rolled out at Widnes? Now, I was looking at it and thinking it's an absolute no-brainer, and I have promised I will mention this to the club. But obviously, you know, with the off-season just coming on us now.
I am of the mind at the moment, Mike, and I need to... I might email Chris Hamilton or whoever. I'm of the mind at the moment to offer doing the club a new website is where I'm at the moment. I'm just working on one for another club at the moment, and I think it would be ideal for what Widnes's output is. And I just, you know, I know that realistically Widnes haven't got the money to splurge out on things that aren't probably players, to be honest. So if I can help support them by providing something like that at no cost or whatever, then I don't mind trying to find some time to help with that. Because like you say, I think little things like that, making the, you know, because ultimately the club has got to create content to satisfy the IMG criteria, and of course if they've got, they can only do they can only put content on what platforms that they've got. So hopefully if you could get something like that, like I said, I think you mentioned the QR codes on the tickets, weren't they? And
yeah, they were, like I believe. Yeah, but I used it, mate. I got sent it before, actually, somebody reaching out to me, and I thought it was brilliant. Easy to use.
Another thing that York have got, which you might not see because I obviously go in the concourse. Oh, you might be able to actually, because the concourses are joined, aren't they, with a food bit in the corner. Mm-hmm. They've got like a pop-up shop type thing. It's like it's almost like a cabinet on wheels that opens out, and it's got enough room. You know, you open it out, so then it's a bit bigger. It's got shirts hanging up. It's got scarves. It's got, you know, pocket money items, and it's like it's something that Widnes desperately need in the North Stand concourse, really. As an example, there's a couple of little things like, and I think, to be honest, I think in my experience in professional sport, that I obviously go to a lot of matches, and one of the things that I always did, from even when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I'd go to games, I'd pay to get in, and I'd go just to see what clubs were doing. Like I said this to Carl Fitzpatrick when I had a meeting with him earlier in the year. I said, go to ice hockey, because you go there and you'll see that they do 50-50 draw, they do shirt off the bat raffles, they've got people doing various things, they've got little stalls set up for X, Y, and Z, they've got chuckered puck and all this sort of thing. Every different ground or game or club that you go to will do something that you might look at and think, actually, if we could do that at our club, and it might make a difference. And if it can add, you know, a few hundred quid of revenue here and there, that's ultimately what the business is.
Yeah, 100%. I did actually mention to the club actually about the pop-up shops, particularly in the North Stand. And look, the answer that I got is the Astra Olympic Match Day volunteers. So, you know, obviously if there is anybody who's available and willing to help on a match day, you know, I'm sure the services would be greatly appreciated. I was, to be honest, half thinking on a couple of occasions myself, maybe sticking my hand up, you know, to get involved and see what we can do there with a pop-up shop. But you are absolutely right, James, in terms of, you know, there's got to be a bit more, you know, thinking off the cuff thinking. I think match day experience, look, we are doing some good things, you know. The learning disability team, the ladies are playing beforehand. I think at the Toulouse game, there was like a charity match going on there. There are little steps, you know, being made, but still, you know, when you go into that North Stand concourse, it's very grey. People are just going to the toilet or queuing up for drinks. You feel like something's needed there, you know, just to spruce the place up a little bit and build a bit of excitement into the game, you know, certainly for kids.
What's mad as well is that in the South Stand concourse, they're actually painted white and black, aren't they? I don't know if you've been in the South Stand concourses, Mike, but
yeah, they
are painted white and black. And it's only a simple thing, that, but it does make a massive difference to how the place feels. I don't actually think there's an awful lot. There's just little things that could be done that would just make it, you know, make it better. And I think what the restrictions are to that, I don't know. Like we've said before, I think, and I don't mind putting my hand up to try and pull ideas together or to lead a fundraising body, if you like. You know, I said about, you know, do you rate, if the council are saying you can't do that because it costs money, well, let's try and raise the money to do it, because I think it'll be beneficial to the club. You know, like earlier in the year, the reason they shut the blocks of the stand was to save 700 quid. And it's like, well, if 30 people were put off coming the match because of that, it's completely wiped out the savings that you've made anyway. And I'm not saying that I couldn't tell you that I know 30 people who didn't go to the match, but it's little things like that, that if it's money that's the issue, it's like, you need just, I'm sure there'll be people willing to help pull certain things together. The North Stand's a funny one, especially because the central concourse is usually open for food and whatever, but then the one that they used to use for like the beer is always shut. So that end opposite the toilets is always a bit like, you know, dead and nothing going on there. You know, can you do more family? You know, could you have a family room or something like that? Or, you know, they do this really well at football league grounds. They'll have like a little room for the kids that's got like PlayStations in and, you know, ping pong and giant Kinect 4 and even like little tables where you can draw your favourite player and stuff like that. And it's like little ideas like that might make the difference between someone paying however much to come every week than not come at all.
I do, whatever the idea is, I certainly feel that we could be doing a little bit more in terms of that, you know, match day experience, certainly for kids, you know, like all them ideas that you've run through, and I'm sure there's more as well, you know, that other people have got. You know, it'd be really good if the club, you know, now as the fan base and the club are much more closer together, you know, started really reaching out to people, A, for ideas, and then, like you say, B, you know, to kind of come together and come up with some sort of, you know, resolution to it, like you say, you know, even like fundraising and stuff, and, you know, keeping a little pot for things like that could make all the difference.
Yeah, because I think as much as yeah, the club needs money and you know, Widnes Vips, whatever, is tailored towards raising money to give to the club. But actually, people building, helping to build the community around the club is actually just as valuable, because if you build a, you know, if a community of people do something that then makes one person come to the game, that's the lifetime value of that one person coming to the game far exceeds what we might donate month to month on, you know, in Vips, you know what I mean? So I think it's little thing, and I've seen it in other, it's building that community and mobilizing the people you've already got to feel like they can do something to help, that isn't just a case of, oh, well, just give us a little bit extra money. You know what I mean? I think that's where, and I get that it's difficult because of the situation with the council, you know, it's not your ground, but I think Widnes have got to be stronger, and I think Widnes can be stronger and be like, well, look, there's only one club that uses that north stand, and that's Widnes Vikings. There's no other club around who's going to ever use it. So let's celebrate what it is and do what we can within it. So yeah. Any other questions, Mike?
Yeah. So what's your honest opinion of the 2024 season, and then obviously expectations for the 2025 season? I know we briefly touched on upon it before, but yeah, what's your, go on, go first, James.
I got 5 of the top 6 of the championship correct in my pre-season predictions. The only one I didn't get correct was Widnes, because I didn't tip Widnes to finish in the top 6. And that was the first time, actually, that I'd not tipped Widnes to finish in the top 6 since they got relegated. So I think I might just have to keep not tipping them to make the top 6.
I'm assuming you had Sheffield in there.
Halifax it was.
All right, okay.
I had Halifax. But I got the other 5 right. So on paper, Widnes' squad this season was probably the weakest one that they've had since relegation from Super League. But in some ways, it was probably a bit more. I think Dan Murray, the signing of Dan Murray definitely swung it for me. I think if Widnes don't sign Dan Murray when they did, I think it could have been a very different season. I think the signing of him was actually critical to getting Widnes, you know, imagine they're on a pendulum swing or you know, whatever. I think he was just critical to getting them going the right way. And I think if they hadn't signed him and then, you know, and Liam Kirk had got struck down early or Callum Field had got down earlier than he did, I think it would have been a difficult season. I think given how it started, especially with that Swinton game, I think they did really well to get where they did. I think probably you would look at it and almost say, I bet there's probably a part of Alan Coleman that's probably a little bit disappointed that they didn't do even better, because I think they had a couple of slumps in the season where a couple of results either way, they would have comfortably finished at least 4th, probably even 3rd. They did really well to get to a point where at one point, 2nd was in their grasp, and I think there'll be a little bit of disappointment that they missed out on that. But I think it was probably for a good thing, because it gives room for manoeuvre and room for improvement next season. You know, if you'd have finished 2nd or 3rd this season, next season would have been, you know, the expectation levels would have gone really high. Whereas now, the expectation levels are probably going to be right. Widnes needs to be getting playoffs next season, and anything else, you know, and try and do something beyond that.
Yeah, very much the same in terms of the 2024 season. Like you said, you know, I think Batley at home, York at home even. Toulouse game could have gone either way. We'd just probably run out of steam there. You know, Featherstone at home, there's four games straight away that could quite easily have been 8 points if we'd have been just slightly better on the day. Even the Whitehaven draw at home, you know, we really, you know, that was a very winnable game. You know, so you're talking 9 points there that was very easy to get. And, you know, if you're in camp and, you know, certainly as a fan, you know, it's very positive for next season that's how close you was. I think off-field has been probably the biggest success of the season. I think we was a very fractured fan base, fractured club. I don't think I've ever seen it as distant from each other in many different ways as what it was. And that's all come back together, which is great. And to finish it off with that, that following on Saturday was unbelievable, and we're springboarding into, you know, the season ticket sales with a bit of momentum. I think on field for me, sorry, just quickly, I think on field, anybody at the start of the season, if they'd have said, if you'd have got in the playoffs on points difference, you'd have snapped somebody's hand off. So, yeah, I think it's been a success.
I think Alan Coleman said it in the post-Barrow chat that Widnes Vikings are a playoff team. And I think that has got to be now. That's what the fans and the club have got to believe in and establish themselves at. Widnes should be a playoff team, and it shouldn't be not in an arrogant way and not in an entitled way, but ultimately Widnes should be a playoff team in the Championship, and it's maintaining that standard and maintaining that level of authority about the club and things like that. That you know, since Widnes have been, you know, when people are talking about Super League and blah 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 blah, very rarely does anybody mention Widnes anymore in terms of potential teams. Widnes need to be proving themselves as a top Championship club so that people are thinking, actually, Widnes, look at York. I mean, there's a potential York, but there's no fans there, is there? They struggle for a fan base. You know, whether if they were in Super League, it'd be any different, I don't know. You look at some of the other clubs in and around, other than Bradford, you feel Widnes have got most of what you would need to make that step up. But the problem is Widnes themselves haven't proven that over the past few years. And it's time now to really sit in that playoff position and establish themselves.
100%. And look, you know, what you touched upon there, Bradford and ourselves, it's fan base and heritage and history. And, you know, it should have always been the case in the Championship. Obviously, it hasn't been, for many different reasons, which we need another podcast to go through as to why. There's so many reasons, but, you know, it hasn't been the case, and it always should have been and should be, like you've just said. It's about having people at the club who respect the history, respect the jersey, you know, want to be a part of the history and growing the club back and being there for the right reasons. And unfortunately, you know, my belief is in, you know, the recent past, we've not had them, you know, we've not had them people on board. And I do feel now that we do have that. You know, a lot of the recruitment drive this year at the start of the season, people were turning the nose up. But how many of them players have give everything to the jersey this year? And, you know, it is a massive eye-opener, and I don't want to go in on any ex-players, but, you know, a lot of these, you know, players who people, you know, used to be fans' favourites, and I'm sure people are close to, at the end of the day, they flattered to deceive, because we never got into the playoffs, and we never looked like a, you know, a battle-hardened playoff team. And these lads who have come in with, by the way, the lads that are still there, you know, and the coaching staff, we do look aside now with a bit of steel behind us, and aside that, you know, that they want to play the part in the heritage and the history, and you've got to build from that now. And I'm just glad to be sat here speaking that, it, you know, I've got confidence about that now, which is something that I could never have said, you know, in the last couple of seasons.
So the countdown will commence shortly. We might do a countdown through the off season. The podcasts are going to remain, although we're not going to be doing them weekly. We'll probably have a few weeks break, but then try and resume them fortnightly. We'll try and get some guest interviewees on over the off season to keep you entertained. And of course, we're always open to feedback and suggestions. Mike, thanks for your company over what have we done 19 episodes. So we've not done too bad there. 19 and 18 weeks, we've done well. And yeah, so we'll hopefully be back. I am impending an arrival, which might take up a bit of time for a little while for me, but hopefully we'll still find time to record the podcast. But keep an eye out for it on the Widnes Rugby League fans Facebook page and on Twitter as well. Any final thoughts, Mike?
Not really, mate. It's just other than you say 19 there, feels like 8 weeks ago since we started. It's absolutely flew by, to be fair, hasn't it? It's unbelievable. Probably the stuff we've waffled on and talked
about. Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest, it does make me think about how difficult it used to be when I did it on my own, because, you know, I'd obviously try and tee up interviews and stuff as best as I can, but the weeks go so quickly and you have the match on a Sunday and before you know it, you think, oh, flipping heck, it's Tuesday, Wednesday, you need to do the podcast. You've not organised anything with anyone. And you think, oh, so at least with the both of us, we can keep each other company. So, and hopefully next year, if we can get a place to film, we can hopefully start getting people in to join us on recording.
Yeah, 100%. And just actually quite quickly, to be fair, mate, you know, thank you to everybody who listens, because again, on Saturday, people coming up to me, and I'm sure people come up to you as well, James, and, you know, really complimentary over the podcast. And, you know, at the end of the day, it'd be pointless if people didn't listen. So just, yeah, thanks to everybody and the feedback, and have a good off season.
Yeah. It is a bit of a lonely place sometimes, the press box, because I don't get to see people like you do, like when you're in the away end. I just see the same people all the time. So, anyone who leaves a comment and a message, it's greatly appreciated, and that's why I try and encourage it as much as possible. But for this week and for the next few weeks, that's all from myself and Mike. Thanks, everyone, for listening as usual, and we'll see you very soon.